Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
All right, my fellow Canadian and tough enough co-host Renee Young here on Talk is Jericho today. She's worked hard to drop her Canadian accent, although you might hear it slip out a time or two as we talk about growing up north of the U.S. border. But you know what else you'll hear as you listen today? You'll hear my brain operating at peak performance as I remember childhood TV shows, the names of the Kids in the Hall cast members, plus we'll find out which member of the Kids in the Hall hit on Renee. Not kidding, all of that information. You got to be smart. You got to be sharp. You got to have an edge.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. The pot of thunder and rock and roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride because it's a Friday.
It's
And guess what's starting on Tuesday, the brand new Tough Enough on USA Network. We're down to 13 contestants, and the panelists, Hulk Hogan, Daniel Bryan, and Paige, all of them Talk is Jericho alumni, may I say that. They're all ready to make some tough decisions, and today I've got my Tough Enough co-host on Talk is Jericho, Renee Young. She's also a fellow Canadian. She has a favorite Canadian. She's going to tell us who that is. We had a great time sitting down in Madison Square Garden, the most famous arena in the world. Two Canadian says exchanging funny stories and laughs. Speaking of funny stories and laughs, go to check out my digital series, Comedy Central, Nothing to Report, racking up the laughs and the views thanks to you guys. We're well over a million hits, hopefully on our way to more episodes. Who knows? Maybe we'll even get to take it to a full-blown TV series. If you haven't checked it out yet, go to YouTube, search Nothing to Report. Six episodes, five bite-sized minutes of comedic genius. I guarantee you're going to laugh. If you don't like it, I'll give you your money back, all right? That's the proof. That's the word. That's the law. Right now, right here, right now. Go check out Nothing to Report. Help us get this thing to series, man. All right, having a good time here out in the Bahamas. Came here for a couple days with the family to relax for a bit before the intensity in 12 cities begins. I'll tell you all about that in a few seconds. Got to tell you something, man. Something that irks me. Taking off my hat right here, right now. Getting ready to step on my step in my rant box, a little bit of a Dennis Leary style rant. Okay, listen, let me tell you this. I love technology, okay? I understand what it does. I'm in the forefront. I was the first guy to have a website. I was one of the first guys to be on that Twitter. I get it. But why do people carry their cell phones and their GoPros everywhere they go? All right, I'm here in Atlantis, in Bahamas. I was on the crazy river. You get on this river, you sit in a tube, you go through these crazy rapids, up and down. It's a great, great time. And I'm seeing probably, I don't know, 10, 15, 20% of the people are holding their cameras in their hands on selfie sticks, on GoPro sticks, and they're filming themselves going down the crazy river. Now, they're not quite enjoying it because you got to hold on with two hands when you're on this tube. And they're not doing that because they got one hand on the tube and one hand on their devices. Okay, I get it. Listen, I understand. You want to film yourself going down the rapids. Let me ask you this. Are you ever going to watch it again? Huh? Is anybody going to give a rat's ass watching your home movies of you going down the rapids? Come on. I don't understand this. I find in this day and age, we're losing ourselves and not living in the moment. Okay, we're not getting a chance to live in the moment. If you're going down a water slide on a tube, this is a very exciting deal. It's a fun thing. It's riveting. It's exhilarating. Why are you going to want to watch this through a little 2-inch computer screen, a 2-inch phone screen? Throw the phone away. Put down the GoPro and live it. Feel it. You know what I'm saying? It's like when people go to a rock and roll show. Listen, man, I'm guilty of it. I'm on my phone all the time because my phone is my office. I get it. But when I go on a water slide, no phone. I don't want to film myself going on a phone. I mean, how egotistical do you have to be to hold up a selfie stick on a rapid ride? I don't want to see my face. Look at me. I'm going on the rapid ride. This is great. Who's going to want to watch that? The answer is nobody. You post it on your Instagram, maybe 15 seconds of it. Fine. Film the 15 seconds, then put the phone away. I go to the Rolling Stones show. Okay? I filmed 15 seconds of Some Girls. A, because I requested it when the Stones put up their request, a song online. B, my friend Speewee loves Some Girls. So I filmed it for him to see that the Stones were playing Some Girls. I took a couple pictures of it. I put the phone away. Guy in front of me filmed the whole show on his phone. You're not going to want to go back and watch the entire show on your phone. It's too small, and it's too crappy. When a band plays a show, it's not meant to be filmed on a phone, okay? Instead of watching the show and living it and breathing it and loving it, the guy was watching it through the screen. So it's like you're watching it through spectacles, like through a monocle. I don't want to watch it through a monocle. I want to see the show through my own two eyes. I want to feel it. I want to live it. I want to enjoy it. It's like when I'm doing a Fozzy show and I'm singing the songs and I look into the crowd and people are filming it or they're on their phone texting about it or they're taking pictures and then looking away. Don't! Okay, listen, I understand. Take your picture. Everybody wants to take a picture of the show that they're seeing. I agree. I get that. Okay? But then put the phone away. Enjoy the gig for what it is. Live it. Feel it. Feel it for what it is, man. You know, it's a rock and roll show. Oh, it drives me crazy. I remember a few years ago, Ozzy went, you know, nobody has any commitment anymore when they take a picture. Someone says, Ozzy, can I take a picture with you? You're like, okay, fine. Back in the day, you would have a phone in your pocket. You'd have a camera in your pocket. You'd carry the camera with you. If you were lucky enough, maybe you'd get to see Ozzy and take a picture with him. Now, you just keep your camera in your camera's in your phone. You got your phone with you everywhere. There's no commitment. If I'm walking down the street and I see Edward James Olmos, I'm like, hey, look, there's Edward James Olmos. Don't care about Edward James Olmos. Don't even know an Edward James Olmos movie, but I'll take a picture with him because he's famous. And I've got a camera. So there's no commitment necessary. There's no effort necessary. I'm just taking the picture with Edward James Olmos, and I don't know anything about him. Nothing against Edward James Olmos. I'm sure he's a great guy. Open invitation to old Eddie James to be on Talk is Jericho. But my point is, it's so easy to take a picture nowadays. There's no commitment because everybody has their cameras on their phone. So when they go to a rock and roll show, what's the first thing you do? I'm going to hold it up and film the whole thing. You know? What am I going to do when I'm at a movie? Take my phone out and read my Twitter as I'm at the movie. You're losing the point of what a movie is. I mean, I'm guilty of it. Like I said, I'll watch Game of Thrones. And sometimes I'm reading my phone, so then I got to stop Game of Thrones and rewind it to figure out what I missed. Instead of just enjoying the episode, sometimes, you know, I put the phone down, say for the next 60 minutes, I'm going to watch Game of Thrones and that's it, and it's not going to interrupt me, it's not going to bother me, and I enjoy the show. I feel the show, I learn what's going on, I get into it. I'm not paying one attention to my stupid phone and one bit to the show, and you enjoy it more. So I guess what I'm saying is enjoy your life. Enjoy what's going on in front of you. It's great to document it, but don't document the whole thing. If you're going on a water slide, don't take your phone. I went today and a guy went, hey, I listen to your podcast. I love Talk is Jericho. This is real, by the way. Can I take a picture with you? I said, sure. If we get off the river ride at the same time. He goes, no, I've got my phone on me. How do you have your phone on you? It's waterproof. Why do you have your phone on you? I mean, it's lucky that he did because he wanted to take a picture with Chris Jericho, but drives me crazy. Selfie sticks, GoPros, just enjoy life. I tell you to enjoy life. I wish I could, but it's too late. You know why the guy said that? Because he had his phone on a selfie stick, and he was too busy documenting the entire experience without actually watching it for himself with his own two eyes. All right? All right, I just had to get that off my chest, man. Selfie sticks on a river ride. Give me a break. All right, anyways, I'm excited. I had a great time today on the river ride. I'm going to have a great time with my Tough Enough co-host, Renee Young. She's coming up. We're here in the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden, and it's two Canadians taking over. It's Renee Young and Chris Jericho. We have a ghost TV here that keeps popping on and off.
Yeah, I know, but you know what? I feel like it's not that bad to just have
some hockey on
the
background.
Though there's not a New York or Canadian team, so I actually have zero
interest in any of this.
Care about this.
Yeah, exactly. Because if it's not Canadian, it's crap.
Yeah, we're at MSG.
We are at MSG.
I get very excited to come here.
Have you been here a bunch of times?
No.
Because you're a New Yorker now. You've never been to Madison Square Garden?
I've been here once before, and it was for Hall of Fame. At 2 years ago,
okay,
at for the Hall of Fame we had here. That
right.
was my first time coming in.
That was it?
That's it. And, oh, actually, no, that's not true. I came down and saw a Rangers-Canucks game.
Okay.
Last year.
But you're officially a New Yorker now.
Yeah.
Via Toronto.
Oh, yeah, I've got the driver's license and the whole deal.
Really?
I pay the insane taxes. I have a tiny little apartment that I pay a buttload of money for.
Mm-hmm.
I do all those New York things. I got stuck in traffic coming down here to meet you. That's a thing that comes
with it. You're like, there's some traffic in New York. It's like, what? Traffic
what
in New York City? There's no way.
I got an Uber, and he like asked me which way I wanted to go, and I'm not a New Yorker enough to really make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, whatever one you think's best. And then it took us, 3 hours.
You know what
to
I was thinking? Because I flew in last night and took a taxi from the airport. I wonder if there's a war between New York taxi drivers and Ubers. They must hate the fact that Uber exists now.
Even so, when you take one of the regular New York taxis, and then there's always like that video that plays that tells you if it's a green taxi or a yellow taxi of what areas of the city they can go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like full on like gang wars, but for taxis, I think. Like, it's really insane. But there's also with Uber certain times that they do like this crazy premium pricing. Like, I live really close to LaGuardia. I could walk there if I had to.
Okay.
It was like $25 to get there during like this prime time.
Mm-hmm.
What a crock.
What a crock, right? I bet you too, because they're not allowed around the airport either. You can't call an Uber to come pick up at the airport.
No,
like sacred New York taxi driver ground, right?
That's their joint.
But
then there's always the people that like when you walk out of the airport, they're like, oh, you need a cab, you need a taxi. And like, those guys are the bullshitters.
You're not supposed to go to those guys at all.
No. I
learned that years
all
ago.
They're full-on criminals.
Right, because like, $80, $100, $200, whatever it is.
Yeah,
right?
Take the bus.
Or the train.
Yeah.
It's New York. See, that's the thing, the difference between New York and L.A. I love New York. You just walk out in the street, you get a taxi, you're fine.
It's a free ride.
L.A., there are no taxis there.
Mm-mm.
So Uber is much better for L.A. than it is for New York.
Can they pick you up at the airport there?
I don't know, because once again, there's not like big taxi lines.
I don't know. I just heard you're
I don't
Canadian.
Know.
Yes.
Is that did you have to work? Did you have to work on that when you first came here?
I did.
Really?
Before
on your
WWE
accent?
Would pretty much let me on the air, I had to go see a voice coach.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a woman in Manhattan on like Madison Avenue somewhere, which seemed very fancy to me at the time.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're going to this voice coach on Madison Avenue. But yeah, I just had to go in and like be like, ow, now. How? Just
seriously?
It was all about
like My Fair Lady.
But it was like a 10-week course. Like, this was no joke.
But
it
like,
was
were
insane.
Were you coming in there with like, hey, I'm Renee Young and I'm ready to do
it. Hey, guys, just wonder if we can all have a beer and just have a good time, yeah?
That's what I mean. Like, how were you pronouncing those words anyways?
Well, I don't think I was doing it that bad. Every now and then I'll hear it if I say, sorry.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a bad
sorry.
One. Sorry.
We
bad.
Say it almost like Surrey. Like,
yeah.
That's,
yeah,
Surrey.
Like Surrey, like on your phone.
Yeah, on your phone. Surrey, I'm Surrey.
Like Surrey Cruise.
Are you Surrey? No, I'm Surrey. Sorry. Sorry.
I don't know what else, because I feel like being in like from Toronto, accents aren't that bad.
Mm-mm.
But if you're from like Newfoundland,
oh,
they're
yeah.
crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or if you're from out west, everyone's just like laid back stoners.
Well, it's like,
which I condone, by the way, everyone just have a good time. No,
we're not
that.
Saying there's anything wrong with being
a
laid back stoner. But there is different Canadian accents, just like there is different American accents,
mm-hmm.
Louisiana or California or whatever.
They're just not nearly charming enough.
They're not as charming mm-hmm. as what we have.
Mm-hmm.
But because, like Winnipeg accents is like, everyone says, oh, you ever say a boot? We don't really say a boot in Winnipeg. We are more of like the movie Fargo. Oh, yeah, you betcha.
Exactly.
That's crazy. That's kind of like the mid-Canada
accent.
That's
like the whole Minnesota
accent.
Kind of.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the whole
exactly.
region from there, right? Yeah.
And Toronto is more the, what are you talking about? How you doing, eh?
Yeah.
Like that sort of thing.
And even if you go like to Barrie, which is like 45 minutes west.
Barrie, Ontario.
Barrie, Ontario. Yeah. You can hear like a different dialect there rather than even just in Toronto. But I feel like I kind of escaped it a little bit. But I mean, I think everyone WWE knew I was from Canada
mm-hmm.
and they're like, oh, eradicate that accent.
Who told you had to go to a voice coach?
who was it that told me that? Big, you know Big?
Yeah, yeah, Big, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was him that told me to do it.
He was like one of the bosses of the the communications side of the company or whatever.
Exactly, yeah, it was a very short lived. It was him, yeah, it was then.
So he actually said you have to go to a dialect coach.
Yeah, oh that yeah, so it crazy. Was like, it was one of the first things I had to do. That in like, actually no, the first things that I did when I got to WWE was doing the voice coach. But before I even did that, I was still in Toronto and they brought me in to interview the Rolling Stones. Which
what?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
For who brought you in?
So, everyone, like whoever was in charge of WWE.
Oh, when WWE had the pay-per-view with the Stones. No, it was in Newark or something?
It was in Jersey, but they did the red carpet.
Okay.
Here.
At the Garden?
It wasn't at the Garden. It was at,
like a club or something, whatever.
Yeah,
theater.
One of the theaters just like right in Times Square area.
So they brought you in and said, we want you to interview the Stones.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Like, even when I think about that now, like, I mean, I obviously remember it, but you do so many things in a, like, life just goes by so fast. You're like, oh my God, I interviewed Mick Jagger. Like, I exchanged words with Mick Jagger. And
that
which is
so
funny
crazy.
Because I saw you at the Rolling Stones concert in Toronto.
That's right. Now, that was before this, right?
Was before this.
No, after. They did the pay-per-view first because that's when they were only doing select. They were
they
only
were
gonna do one or two
together.
Shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So, you, yeah, because first of all, when I saw you in Toronto at the Stones, I was so drunk. So drunk. Because I remember, like, you were there, but I was like, hey, and I didn't really know who you were, but I knew who you were, but I was just beyond destroyed. So,
well, you've done a few things. Well, I saw you there when you were having a great time. And I was with my mom and my brother, and I was also dabbling. But then there was also the time that we went out and you stole my scarf.
Well, stealing is kind of
a stiff term
because I think you gave it to me. What I recall.
I'm not
and it was
really
in, like,
sure.
Dayton, Ohio. At some like college frat bar where guys were playing beer pong.
Yeah, beer pong was happening. Seamus was there and you took my scarf because I remember I saw you at the airport in the morning and I didn't even know you well enough to be like, dude, you have my scarf. I just had to let it go.
I
saw it on Instagram. I was like, you dick. How dare you?
Oh, that's right. Because once again, I think I went to the airport just still in the cups.
It happens.
I still have that scarf, so I can give it back to you.
But it's a great scarf. But the thing is, it's a very flower-printed scarf. But you really had an essence to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Not
I'm a scarf
lot of
guy.
Men can do that.
Well, it stems from Keith Richards. He's, you know, wearing the scarf is a very Stones type of a thing.
Or even like Steven Tyler hanging
absolutely.
It from the mic stand.
But would Steven Tyler wear that around his neck?
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Actually,
right?
I don't know. He is kind of like an old woman.
Well, kind
he
of.
Might. It might just be a different essence than what you had.
He might wear like a kerchief.
Yeah, like an old bag lady, just like trying to get a discount.
Grandma
at
Moses,
the
right?
Store.
Selling flowers for the Salvation Army. So let's go back to when you interviewed the Stones. I mean, how did that go? Like, what did you have 5 minutes with them? Did you have 20 minutes with them?
Well, first of all, I had very little experience doing anything like this. I'm a hack kind of through and through. I just kind of make shit up and it for some reason works. I don't know.
Yeah.
But so they brought me in to do the Stones, which is obviously way above my pay grade. And so I'm on the red carpet. I think I was wearing like this really horrible outfit too.
And that scarf.
It's just a scarf.
Hold on, what do you mean I was wearing this horrible outfit? Like you left the house going, this is a horrible
outfit,
I'm going to wear it.
No, I think at the time I was just making do, but it was definitely not Stones worthy.
Gotcha.
But anyway, so I'm on the red carpet waiting and we weren't even sure if we were going to get them because who knows how those things go. You're on the red carpet kind of waiting for it. But they actually walked down the red carpet first, which never happens. Mm-hmm. Like usually there's like all these, you know,
they wanted to get it over with. Yeah.
They just kind of strolled through, and I didn't really get to talk to Keith for very long, unfortunately. But Mick came through, and he's wearing like in classic Mick Jagger fashion, this like amazing velvet green suit. I kind of shot the shit with him. It was only like 2 or 3 minutes, but you know, they were obviously just playing like hits and doing all the stuff for the documentary and stuff. And I was like, what's, you know, is there one song that you still go back and you love to play? And he's like, well, what's a song you like? And I was like, Beast of Burden. He's like, then Beast of Burden, baby. And like, of
always
course,
a
he was
charmer,
just like blowing
right?
smoke up my ass, but I was like so into it. I was like, oh my God. But like when you interview someone like that, normally you like kind of get in your own head and you're not really paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
It just, at the end of it, you're like, did I say anything cohesive? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really know what just happened. But I actually remember it very vividly that it just kind of went smoothly and we interacted and I think I made him laugh at one point. I don't know, but it was great.
Did you never watch it back?
I actually have never seen that footage. I don't ever really watch any of my own stuff back, though. I don't ever look for
it. I get the same thing, though, like when I do podcasts, because I'm keeping track of the levels and seeing what the time is at. And
yeah, you're like also, a doctor over there.
Yeah, I am, exactly.
I'm
like a super like $6 million man of technology now with my little Zoom recorder and two plugins, which
cool.
is really... And I still forgot the extension cord at home, so now it's on batteries. But you listen back to the interviews... And you don't really remember a lot of the stuff. And that's why I like listening back to the podcast, because when it's done, I can listen back to it as a fan.
Totally.
You know, now I'm working, so I got to keep it rolling. But as a fan, you can go back and say, that was really cool.
Yeah, I guess if you're doing like long format stuff too, because who knows what you talk about. Mm-hmm. If it even makes sense and you deviate. Like we've already deviated like 1,000 times from just me saying the Stones into a scarf.
Well, sure.
You never really know where it goes.
Yeah.
But I never really watch anything back, mostly because... I don't know, I watch it and I'm like, ooh, God, I do things.
My hair's out of place.
I talk weird. I talk out of my mouth weird, or there's no point in
You talk out of your mouth? So
yeah,
weird.
I have like the Tina Fey, Drew Barrymore mouth.
Wow.
Where I talk at like the side of my mouth a lot that I don't notice until I see it back and I'm like, whoa.
Without the Tina Fey scar.
Yeah, exactly.
Have we ever found out what that scar is?
I think it's actually a really bad story. I feel like she
some
got
kind of
I think
abuse
she got mugged
or something.
I think something happened when she was a kid.
Wow.
I think. I remember reading it because I actually think it's in her book.
Okay.
In Bossy Pants. I think she talks about it in that. It's some kind of Horatius story, though.
But
is
now
Horatius
that I'm,
a word it is?
Horatius?
It
is now. That's a word. Horatius. We just created Horatius.
Horatius, yes.
Hello, madame. You learned that at the dialect coach.
Yeah.
Horatius. Horatius. Horatius.
Horatius. Also pronounced hellacious, whichever you want.
That one could be like a Japanese version of it,
Japanese
right?
Japanese Horatius.
Did you get hired to be an interviewer? Because you're kind of a jack of all trades here in the WWE at this point.
I just put my gum down on the table.
Please do.
So
well, you can chew on it later. Yeah,
here.
Exactly.
No, I didn't really know what I got hired for, to be honest. So I was in Canada doing a post WWE show. We would cover Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views,
just
all that
kind
stuff.
Of on your own or for Score Network?
I was doing it for the Score. I was working for the Score, but I also was doing like a daily. First Take kind of show as well, covering all other sports, but mostly just opinion, kind of bullshit, just having
gotcha.
Fun kind of
was
stuff.
Was that with...
With Cam Stewart.
What's the other cast name that just got hired here?
Arda
O'Cal.
Yeah,
he was involved with that too,
and
right?
Jimmy Corderas
Jimmy too. Yeah, Jimmy Corderas.
So we were doing that show together, and then when my contract was up at the Score, I knew that I was looking to get work in the States and kind of make the jump down here to kind of get stuff going, and then... I had, I'd kind of taken a couple other meetings in a few other places, and then it just kind of worked out to come to WWE. But I had no idea what I was going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I assumed that I was going to be doing something similar of doing more, the shows I did were ridiculous. They were ridiculous and stupid, but fun.
Yeah,
just jokes and dumb nonsense.
So you would review Raw or whatever?
Yeah,
and,
gotcha. we would do our win and fail and kind of make fun of things or poke fun of things.
Corderas is involved too, lots of really bad jokes.
Total dad jokes.
Terrible puns.
Full on dad jokes. Yeah.
Dad jokes. Yeah. Balderas with the dad jokes.
I figured I'd be doing something kind of like that. And then, I was doing a couple shows for international that are just, kind of magazine style shows that are just off teleprompter reviewing Raw, SmackDown, same here, but not opinion based. And then started doing the backstage interviews. But it was definitely a different hat for me to come in and do that and be very straight laced. That's not what I do at all.
Oh, like keeping it totally.
Yeah, very nice.
Hi,
girl.
I'm Renee Young.
Yeah, it was weird. It still sometimes is weird when I catch it. I'm like, wait, what? That's so bizarre to just do.
Playing it so straight.
Because I did comedy and acting and all this other nonsense before coming here. So now to put that stuff in my back pocket, and it's not, every now and then I can get in an eye roll or some kind of weird face that I make to somebody, but
it's funny though, because that happens quite a bit. Like if you deal with somebody, let's say somebody who was in NXT or somebody that was working wherever and get hired to WWE as a performer. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you get here, all the stuff that you got hired for gets taken away.
It's gone. Yeah.
You know,
it's like this bare bone structure that you're kind of starting from scratch again. It's bizarre.
Now, they gave you a name, too.
Yeah.
What was your name when you were doing it in the Score?
So Renee Paquette is my real
name.
Renee
Paquette, right.
And so they my first name was Renee Sterling. And I kind of freaked out. Because I didn't know my name was going to be changed. I had no idea that that was part of the deal.
Wow.
So here I am, like, packing up my apartment in Toronto. I had been coming back and forth to New York trying to find an apartment. And it was right before I came down to do the Stones gig. And I get an email saying, Renee Sterling. And I'm like, what?
Excuse me?
Who's
is this another Renee?
I don't know what that is. So I kind of had a bit of a meltdown because I didn't like it at all.
You didn't like the name change?
I didn't like the name change, and I especially didn't like the name Renee Sterling. I sounded like some weird, like, sexy secretary, you know? Hi, Renee Sterling here. What are you taking your coffee?
In a comic book. Yeah. Renee Sterling from the Alpha Flight.
Exactly, yeah. Alpha Flight Unite.
Yeah.
So I gave them a bunch of different names to choose from, and luckily they were lenient in that. So I did Renee Young from Neil Young.
Okay.
Is where I got that from. I was kind of going through all of my records at home being like, who's someone that I could steal their name? And I was going to do Rogers, which is Prince's real last name.
Oh, yeah.
I gave them Rustin, which is Audrey Hepburn's real last name.
Really? I didn't know Audrey Hepburn had a gimmick name.
She does have a gimmick name.
Now, isn't Rogers Prince's first name? Isn't it Rogers Nielsen or something? Or
I think it's – or is it the other –
I think Rogers might be his first name.
It might
be. We'll have to.
Yeah, I would have to look that up. I definitely did. I tried to steal the Rogers from.
So you went for Rogers, and then
they didn't want the double R though.
Really?
I gave them Ryan, which is a family name, which Renee Ryan I was actually super into, but they didn't want any of those. They went with Young.
Because that's a classic. That's a classic WWE trick. Is the two letters with the first name and last name being the same? Right.
I still have a really hard time signing Young, so I always just sign Renee on things because Young. Just like I'm a terrible like writer anyways.
You're like,
so
Cher.
It's just like this weird, yeah, I'm like Cher.
It's Prince Rogers Nelson. So his name actually is Prince, but it's Rogers Nelson would be that. So there you go. You just learned to
that's
learn
it right
something.
There. Yeah, I tried to steal it from him, but no go.
They didn't want Renee Rogers.
I got old man Neil Young.
But you chose it. Why did they want you to change your name? Was it too ethnic at first or something?
I think it's just a thing that they normally do with everybody.
Oh, yeah. Want to own your name.
Because I figured, like, with me coming in as an announcer, I was like, well, it's not like I'm going to have merch or anything they're going to make money off of with changing my name. But I think it's just a rights thing that they have.
Yeah.
Once I kind of kicked and screamed, and I definitely cried at one point about changing my name. I just kind of dealt with it, and I didn't delve into looking any further as to why they did it.
Okay.
So now I just kind of deal with
just
it.
Just go with it.
And sometimes now I even feel weird, like, if I'm going to, like, check in for a meeting or something, I'm like, oh, Renee Young is here. I never know what name to give people.
And how long has that been?
2.5 years.
Okay, yeah, so it takes a while to kind of get used to that. Like, for, like, Chris Jericho, I've had it since I was 19, so... Yeah.
You're used to it.
It's very used to it. Even to me, it's a little bit strange and a little bit messed up. It's weird for me sometimes to even say Chris Irvin.
Really?
You know, yeah. Like,
isn't that weird though?
It is your name. Yeah, no, and that's kind of where it gets a little bit spacey. Like, it should not feel weird.
But do you find that happens a lot with being a wrestler? That the lines in your life are very blurred as to what's real and what's not.
Absolutely.
Do you have a hard time with that?
I do have a hard time with that, and this is the reason why. I'm sure Seinfeld went through the same thing.
Yeah.
Because Jerry Seinfeld played the part of Jerry Seinfeld on a show called Seinfeld.
Yeah.
But you know that that part is maybe a piece of him, but not close to him.
Sure.
But I'm sure there's people who think that, you know, he just walks around all the time obsessed with superheroes and eats cereal and has a wacky friend.
Yeah.
So I've had that before where Chris Jericho – playing the part of Chris Jericho in the WWE, but also Chris Jericho on a podcast or in a movie or in a band. People get confused as to which is which, especially when I'm a heel.
Oh,
I bet. Especially when I'm a heel.
I bet. What is it like when you go home, though? Like, when you're just at home with your family,
That's Irvin. That's Chris Irvin. And that's the only time where, okay, Chris Irvin, this is the Irvin family.
Yeah.
But come out, like...
Irvin family rules.
Irvin 5. But if I come on the road and someone goes, hey, Chris Irvin, or someone introduces me as Chris Irvin to try and be kind of... You know,
Chris Irvin's a good name, though. I like it.
But not for professional, though.
I don't know. There's something very, like... I like it. It's got a little pizzazz to it.
You think so?
A little panache. Yeah.
I never thought that.
Chris Irvin. I think it sounds very, like a musician, which you do.
I would never have used that name. Like, if I came into the WWE back in the 2000s, in the aughts... which I just found out, aughts is A-U-G-H-T-S is what they call that. If you're talking the 90s or the 80s, the aughts is the zero years.
Who made that? I don't understand.
That's
the aughts.
Like A-U-G-H-T-S, the aughts, like 2000 through 2009.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. Once again, we'll have to maybe Google that. But
yeah,
in the aughts, when everybody was using, like, you know, Randy Orton, John Cena, Dave Bautista, everybody used their real name. If I would have come through at those time frames and used Chris Irvin, I don't think it would have stuck the same way.
It might not work for a wrestler so much, but I think you as a musician would be cool.
The aughts, the first decade of any century, especially the years 1900 through 1909 or 2000 through 2009, the aughts.
So that's what happens at the beginning of every
every century. A-U-G-H-T-S, the aughts.
Oh,
the learning,
the more you know.
I know, and the thing is, I have to look this up while I'm still carrying on a conversation, which is another
thing. You're a multitasker. You're checking levels.
I gotta do everything.
You're looking up century factoids.
Yeah, exactly. That bugs me too, though, when you're talking to somebody and they're looking at their phone going, uh-huh.
Like, totally.
Come on, man. Like, just give me 5 seconds.
People need to stop
doing that. I know, right?
It's funny. The book Fahrenheit 451 has recently come. I've never actually read it.
Ray Bradbury. Is that Bradbury?
Yeah. So that's one of the books I keep, like, meaning to read, and it's been in and around my house lately, so I keep meaning to pick that up to read it. But it's essentially about that, of, like...
About what?
About people being on their phones and stuff, but it was written so long ago, like, but they have the whole thing about that they use a seashell instead, and people become obsessed with their seashells. And
you're kidding me!
Yeah, it's like this whole... I need to read the whole thing. I might be spewing out a bunch of crap.
Yeah, something... That's completely wrong. Far 50, it was not a seashell. It was a piece of coral.
Aldous Huxley says.
Nice.
But yeah, people are really bad with being on their phones. And sometimes I can be bad about it, but sometimes I will leave my phone at home on purpose.
See, that is the thing that you should do. Because this is the equivalent of, let's say I was talking to you and you're looking at your phone, like, you know, 20 years ago, just picking up a newspaper and holding it in front
people
of your face.
People would hate you.
They would hate you. Like, how
people
rude is that?
You. It's the worst.
You know, and the thing with phones is that you're so obsessed with it. If we stop at a red light for 30 seconds, what do?
It's
check your phone.
It's a habitual thing that people are addicted to.
Yes.
I don't know what that is or how, like, it's one of the, like, I feel like when you think about it and you're like, okay, you know, I don't want to be one of those people that's on their phone all the time or that's obsessed with the internet, that's obsessed with all this crap that doesn't matter from people that you don't know. But at a certain point, you have to be aware of it because that's the way the world works now. It's finding a fine balance. You don't want to be like, I can't just go live in the middle of nowhere and, like, build a farm. And, well, I guess I could, just not right now. I couldn't. But, like, you have to be connected in some way. And I wish that you just didn't. Like, sitting here talking to a person's great. What a good time.
That's the cool thing about a podcast, because how many people do you call on the phone now?
Never. I call my mom randomly when I'm bored for 5 minutes and I get
annoyed. Or maybe a business call or something.
Yeah.
But if it's you and me putting this together, it started as DMs, went to texts. That's about it. Unless it's like, hey, I'm lost or, you know, whatever. But there are people that call me on the phone. I don't answer and I just text them back.
Oh, for sure. I know. But, I mean, that being said, there's a lot of people that I just don't want. I don't like talking on the phone either. I'm just not that big into it. But when people call me, like, you honestly get that feeling of, like, oh, why is this person calling me? Yeah, what do they want? Yeah. There must be, like, what's happening right now?
Yeah.
I always feel like I'm in trouble. Like, even if it's a friend of mine, I'm like, it's like collections calling me or something.
Yeah.
I don't want to pick up.
Where you were, like, if they're calling me, something must be wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Something's wrong, or they're going to bug me about something. Like, it's something annoying like that that is really bad. But even just being out and, like, having dinner with someone or... even just sitting at home watching a movie. You can sit at home, watch a movie, and within 20 minutes, you've picked up your laptop
Absolutely.
Or your iPad, and you're looking at, I'm looking at bullshit shoes that I don't need.
And it
Am
could
I allowed
be
to swear on this?
You have. It's fine.
Great.
We're rocking it.
Sorry,
but
guys.
You could, I mean, like you said, you could be waiting to see it. Like, for example, Dumb and Dumber 2.
Yeah.
I watched it the other day, and it's not good, which really let me down.
I can't watch it. I can't do it.
Oh, don't.
I can't
don't.
Do it.
I held out for so long. And I'm like, I was saying, like, it has to be good.
Yeah.
If they've waited this long, it has to be. And it just wasn't. It was really disappointing.
It was really bad.
And after 20 minutes, I've been waiting to see this movie since it came out and thinking about the concept of it for 10 years.
Yeah.
And 20 minutes in, I'm already starting to look at my phone about nothing. Oh, what's on Twitter? Did I get any tweets, you know?
But most of the time, that's not even indicative of how good the product is. I mean,
right.
Dumb and Dumber 2 is a crap movie, I'm sure, and I refuse to see it.
But what if it's great?
But
Same thing.
It's great. So I was watching the movie The Theory of Everything the other day, which has, like, amazing performances, this great story, and on purpose I will leave my stuff away from me, because as soon as there's, like, a lull in anything, you just pick up your phone to look. Or even, like, I watch stuff on Hulu that has, like, 30-second breaks. And even then, you pick up your phone like an idiot and just look at crap.
Yeah, there's... People who are mad on my podcast when I do ad reads, it takes 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that long.
People don't have patience anymore. There's no patience. There's no sense of attention span with anything. It's bad. Sometimes you have to, like, really focus to have an attention span. Like, even, like, I've stopped using my iPad to read books on because it's still the same thing. Like, sometimes it's cool that you can click on something to get the definition of something. But even just holding a book or reading through a magazine rather than scrolling through
crap
on the internet makes a big difference.
I agree. Even just looking at the screen, you know, you're still looking at the screen. I like turning a page myself.
Yeah.
I like holding a book. Now, is this something that 20 years from now will be obsolete? I don't think so. I think the concept of a book is not going to go away.
I hope not. I think that would be devastating.
You know, devastating.
It would. It is devastating.
It is.
Because, like, I mean, well, you have kids. I mean, would you imagine them not – like, what are your kids like?
They read books.
They
read books. Now, they have iPads, and that's another thing, too. You got to be careful because kids will just sit around and they'll look at the iPad and play video games and watch people playing video games.
Yeah.
There's this guy called Stampy Longnose for this game. His name is Stampy Longnose. That's his gimmick name.
He's a
British guy. Who the game is called Minecraft.
Okay.
And so this guy plays Minecraft and comments on it. And my kids will watch this guy for hours on end commenting on other people playing video games.
My God.
And that's the thing. You know,
crazy.
It's like, go outside and play.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, when we were kids, you would go outside, come home when it gets dark.
You
just
go race
really
each
like
other on
anymore.
The street or something. You know?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. You go throw a ball against the wall. And it's called wall
Practice
ball.
Practice your hurdles or something.
Yeah, do something. But you know what else? You're talking about the technology and how things have really changed. For the first time ever, I watched Fastlane pay-per-view on the network.
Yeah.
On my laptop, which I was watching as I was doing stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I really like about this is the pre-game show, which you are basically the anchor
cool.
of.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Yeah.
And it's really, really well done.
Oh, thanks.
Was this something that you were brought in for? Did you kind of work your way up to that after being brought in just as a interviewer or whatever?
Well, I kind of had to work my way up to doing that because like I said, it's like I came in doing the interviews and doing all these things, but like I have a lot of experience on camera and I have a lot of experience as a TV host prior to coming here. So it's nice to kind of get to flex that muscle a little bit again. But when they had Josh Matthews in here, he was doing those
panels the host.
Before. And I think being a woman taking over that role took a little time to let people get used to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that, I think like just kind of getting into that position and having a woman kind of anchor that role is great. I'm so happy that I get to do that. But I think that was kind of a little bit of a glitch at first of trying to figure out how to make that
work. I would probably
work.
See that like maybe fans, you know, having backstage interviews that are, that are girls or girls in the ring, but actually like a knowledgeable sportscaster that's a girl. It's like when you see the girls on the sidelines at NFL, it's always a little bit of a strange, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. It's a little bit of a disconnect.
It visually sometimes can. Yeah. You see like
a pretty girl, but she knows more about football than 90% of the guys.
How great, right?
Right. You know, and it's like, you know about this business. You know wrestling. You're a fan. You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So when you see this at first, it's like, what is she going to know?
Yeah. Oh, she doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
Oh, why don't you put on a bikini and talk to me?
Zach, show me your puppies. Then maybe I'll listen. And that, you know, that's what you have to go through as a woman in such a male-dominated sport.
Yeah, and you know, I never ever in my career wanted to use that as a crutch for anything because I never really felt like that was a big deal.
Looks?
I mean, that or just being a woman
doing
it, you know, trying to work in a man's world, which I always have ever since I started. Like, I mean, I started doing a show when I was 22.
A wrestling show or a sports show?
No, I was doing sports
show
for the Score. So, I was doing a national show around that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've always been working in a man's world, but I've never really thought of it like that. And I've never really had too many hurdles
with that.
I feel like if you're good at something and you can actually, like, if you're the person that's best for that job, then great.
Right.
Then that's the way that it should be. And if, you know, if you're able to bring something else while you're doing it, then great. But I think, you know, being the person that's good for that job and being able to hold that down and just to create that path for other people. I mean, I think there's so many other girls, I hope, that watch WWE that, I mean, maybe if you're not going to go be a diva, to know that there are other routes to go.
Yes, other things you
can
do.
You can do other things, and you don't have to take back bumps and hurt yourself. You can just kind of just talk and have a good time.
Is that a scripted show when you do the pregame shows?
It not entirely. I mean, we know where we're going in the sense of it, that we know, each – so seg 2, we're going to be talking about the U.S. Championship. Seg 3, we've got the divas, and we've got the Intercontinental title. So we'll know roughly where we want to go with it, and I'll know what video packages we have and what graphic reads I have. But mm-hmm. as far as the conversation goes, I mean, that's a bit more of a free-for-all.
Gotcha.
Which is cool. I prefer working like that. Being on a script is... I don't like it very much.
Mm-hmm.
I like having a bit of an outline just so that we're all on the same page and I don't just go totally rogue, but it's cool to be able to...
Well, that talks like what we were talking about earlier about how you like to be a little bit fun, have a good time with it.
Exactly. So, I mean, being able to do stuff that's, reactionary and know that, like... Yeah, say, Byron's got something to say, and I know he's got a strong opinion, to be able to, kind of push his buttons the right way. Like, when I worked at The Score and I worked with Cam Stewart, it's like I knew that he hated the Clippers and he hated Blake Griffin. And I'd go in there and be like, anyways, my husband, Blake Griffin, and he would just, have a conniption on air, and it's, just that fun stuff that's
Well, and I remember when we did, I did Off the Record a bunch of times, and the original time I did it was probably 2000,
mm-hmm.
Off the Record being the famous Canadian talk show, sports talk show. And the rule was, please, please don't agree with everything.
Yeah.
Don't let everyone agree with everything. Even if you feel the same way, can you please pretend that you don't so we get a conversation going here?
And that's kind of the role as the host too, is paying attention
mm-hmm.
to what everyone's saying. So say everyone's like, yeah, we think John Cena is going to win. To be like, oh, well, okay, well, I think Rusev's
going to win. What if he doesn't?
What about this? Whatever that, just to make that conversation, because otherwise what's the point of having a show if we all have the same opinion? And then
is it the same guys or same crew every time?
Yeah, now it is. We were kind of switching it up before when we would have Paul Heyman come on, or we had Ric Flair come on at certain points, but now it's always Booker. Corey Graves now is up there, and Byron Saxton.
Okay.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, so you have a little bit of a connection now with these guys, right?
Yeah, exactly. And especially, sometimes it was a little bit difficult going in there while I'm trying to cut my teeth doing that, and I'm working with someone like Booker T or Paul Heyman, these guys that are cornerstones of this business,
mm-hmm.
that it's hard for me to come in there and be like, guys, this is what we're talking about and this is what we're doing, because they're like, pat me on the head, okay, little girl, we're fine. But to be able to work with guys like Graves and Byron, and we're all on the same page. I mean, Booker's great. He's so good at that stuff. But there's just we're all kind of more on the same level to be able to have conversations mm-hmm. about stuff, and it's cool.
All right, back to Renee Young. Do you do a lot of stuff at NXT as well? Do you commentate there?
I was doing commentary for a little bit. I am not doing commentary anymore. So I just go down to do when they do the live events, mm-hmm. which is their pay-per-views. I do the panels for that as well.
How did you like commentating?
I liked it. I liked doing it better at NXT than I liked doing it on Superstars.
You do Superstars now.
I was. Yeah. I'm not doing commentary at all anymore.
Gotcha.
But doing Superstars was always a little bit difficult because there's not really stories
mm-hmm.
there per se. They're
just straight matches.
Straight matches, which is great sometimes. But I like doing a 3-man booth.
Because
my strong suit is just chiming in random BS of facts about, Alpha Flight or Mick Jagger's ties and scarves and stuff.
Alpha Flight, by the way, is the Canadian X-Men, in case you're wondering who they are, featuring the amazing superhero called Sasquatch.
So good.
He's actually a Sasquatch. So yeah. He's amazing.
I liked doing it in that aspect. I liked doing NXT. NXT is a lot of fun, though. I mean, the product down there is so good, and there's so many great people down there, and there really is a sense of discovery as a performer there when you're there, and you're not as married to what you have to do and make sure. I mean, obviously, you want your performances to be as great as they can,
right?
But it's not do or die, and you can experiment with stuff down there, and that's what I loved being able to do there.
When you were commentating with Superstars, was there anybody ever in your ear giving you direction?
Because
they don't really pay attention to Superstars as much as Raw or whatever.
Yeah, not too much. I mean, every now and then, Cole would send me a text of, what the hell are you talking about?
Oh, okay. So he's actually paying attention then?
Sometimes.
Oh, because you're with him.
Well, sometimes, because he's getting ready to do the live cut-ins for Raw.
Oh, gotcha.
So he would be there listening on cans sometimes, but for the most part, it was kind of a free-for-all, and then I would go home, and that's when I would rewatch stuff to listen and then send some notes out to Cole or
gotcha.
Kevin Dunn or something.
So obviously you mentioned that, you know, you had your wrestling show on Score before you got here, so mm-hmm. big wrestling fan, like, your whole life?
Yeah, well, you know, I got into watching wrestling, so I... Really, this is a weird story. I more so wanted to be Chelsea Handler. That's always what I wanted to do.
Okay.
When I got into hosting, that's what, like, a light bulb went off the first time I saw her when I was like 19. I was like, that's what I want to do.
Have like a talk show sort of
yeah.
thing?
Yeah. Do a talk show, kind of be a bit more rude and brash. And like, I used to have a show where I would say, like, even if I watch it now, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I said some of the
really?
Crap that I said. Oh, yeah.
Like on the Score?
No, not on the Score. It was, I had a show before on Byte TV. That was my first hosting thing before I went to the Score. And I would do like band interviews and extreme okay. sports. And it was all, I mean, it was all so ridiculous. But my mom would get so upset with the stuff that I would say and be like, you can't say that. You're never going to work. And I'm like, well, Carol Burnett's great and Gilda Radner's great and Joan Rivers is great. And I was obsessed with Sarah Silverman that I would like bring her all this stuff that I loved and these women that were allowed to be gross and rude.
Yeah,
and it was great.
And yeah,
still
rude,
charming
exactly.
in a way.
I mean, that was the whole crux of Joan Rivers'
oh my God,
whole
of course.
Act. Yeah.
Yeah, that was her whole deal. So anyways, I was doing that for a bit. And then I went to the Score because – I mean, when you're in Canada, there's only so many places that you can work and work in television and not have to have another job.
Now, is the Score a pretty big network in Canada?
Well, yeah, it's under Rogers now, so it's all under Sportsnet. So the Score actually doesn't exist anymore, but it's
okay.
all – so now there's TSN and there's Sportsnet. So
gotcha.
There's the two of them. I'm not sure how, like, rights work with them, but mm-hmm. I think that Rogers has a majority of that stuff
okay.
now. But when I went to the Score, they had, like, Cabby was there doing interviews. He's another guy that works for TSN now. But he was doing a lot of these fun man-on-the-street interviews. And I was like, oh, crap, that's where I can go. I can go do my stuff there and have fun and do these ridiculous interviews. And then when I got there, then they, within a couple months, they're like, can you do a wrestling show for us? And I was like, yes, yes, for sure, I can do a wrestling show
for
you.
Of course, because the number one rule of show business is
yes.
whatever they ask you, yes. Can you skydive? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Can you play guitar? Absolutely.
Very
can you
well.
Can you ride a donkey? Absolutely, of course.
You want to go bareback, side saddle? Yeah. What do you need?
And then as soon as you're done, you're calling like donkey riding
exactly.
services. How long
yeah.
will it take to learn how to ride a donkey?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically, it's what happened. They're like, okay, so we're going to start doing this live wrestling show, which was called Right After Wrestling at the time, which we were then forced to change the name for the acronym of
Get
Raw.
It?
Yes, see what we did there, guys? within a couple months, I mean, I went back and I watched a lot of stuff.
So you weren't really watching or fan, per se?
I was... when I was younger,
mm-hmm.
which I guess a lot of people say, especially, like, oh, I watched it when I was
yeah.
younger, and then I kind of fell off a little bit. Like,
especially
that
growing
happened.
Up kind of in the Toronto area, that's a big wrestling.
Big time.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, it's like I still, my dad used to work, my dad works for Live Nation now, it was like a concert promoter, but for a brief period of time, he was working at the Sky Dome at the Rogers Center. So when he was there, he brought me in when they had Raw there, and I went down, like, met Austin and Chyna and Rock and Mick Foley, and my mind was blown then. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was definitely a time in my life when we were two stoning each other on the front lawn. Like, that was happening.
Do not try this at home.
Yeah, we were definitely doing that.
We were trying it at home, yeah.
Once I kind of got back into the rhythm of it, it's like, yeah, you figure out what's going on and
yeah, it's not hard. It's like when you
watching any show,
a soap
really.
Opera too. Like, you jump in, you watch a couple episodes, you get familiar with what's going on,
exactly.
who's who, and you go.
And
from
I,
there.
You know, I had enough of a base to work off of, anyways. I wasn't walking into it totally like carte blanche. I knew roughly
yes.
what I was getting into.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I hadn't watched for a little while, so I was like, okay, PVR this, watch this. Yeah, that was like my regular routine, was watching Raw, tweeting that, and then watching Maury. And tweeting that. It was my favorite. Maury and Raw back to back.
A lot of similarities,
like,
actually.
That's what girls dream of. Just Maury and Raw.
Just doing that the whole, just watching all of that. Nothing else.
There were
but...
some cocktails involved, definitely.
Of course.
But it was, yeah, that's
did
how
you,
I...
Did you watch, like, that's another thing about Canada, is the amazing Canadian-only shows.
Like The Littlest Hobo?
Oh, The Littlest Hobo. It's filmed on videotape.
It's so good.
Like, they grabbed, like, a handheld video recorder and made this show, The Littlest Hobo, which was about a dog that would travel from town to town.
Oh, yeah, you should definitely
and get into adventures, right?
So many adventures, solving crimes, helping kids, just like Just a dog. Think like Homeward Bound, but just with one German Shepherd.
Yeah, that was the German Shepherd. Well, how did the theme song go?
Oh, I would have.
I'm trying to visualize it in my head, and I'm hearing WKRP in Cincinnati, and that's not that's not it. But it was like some like
I can picture lonely, the intro.
Yeah, whistle.
Just like walking on train tracks.
Yeah, like walking like through like a field of daisies or something, and kind of running around.
Yeah.
Littlest Hobo was the big hit.
That one was a big one.
Remember Seeing Things?
No, what's Seeing Things?
Seeing Things is this guy called Louis Del Grande, and he could see the future. So
he was like a detective,
and he would solve his crimes by being able to see the future.
I don't know. That sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah, Seeing Things. What other ones do you remember?
I was trying to think of Fred Penner.
Fred Penner.
Fred Penner was great with his guitar.
He sang
through a
songs
log.
For kids.
Yeah, that was really good. I mean, you and I talked before about like Kids in the Hall and SCTV. Like those were big ones for me. I mean,
that's
growing up
huge,
watching that
huge,
stuff
huge,
was
right.
like huge for me.
It's so funny because when we put this together, and we're gonna say, okay, I'll meet you tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow. Okay, sounds good. And then I was like, oh, I'll send her something Canadian. So I looked up a picture of Bob and Doug McKenzie, sent that to you, and then you sent me a picture of the Kids in the Hall, which is great. Two guys randomly wearing drag for no apparent reason.
I actually have a super hilarious Kids in the Hall story.
Please.
Is that so when I was doing this show for Byte TV, when I would interview bands and extreme sports stuff, I was talking to why can I not think of his name right now?
One of the Kids in the Hall?
Yeah.
Scott Thompson?
No, the main guy.
News David
Radio.
Foley.
David Foley.
Right.
So Dave Foley, so he came in to do a music video for this band that they spent all of their like CanCon money on bringing in Dave Foley
him,
to
yeah.
come in and do this music video. So I interviewed him at North by Northeast, and in my head, I mean, this is a Kid in the Hall. This is like the Kid in the Hall, pretty
much. It's
like
Canadian comedy royalty.
Yeah, big
It's time. Like a member of Monty Python or something being
so
there.
So I was like beyond excited. So I go down, interview, and we have a great time. The interview goes well. And then I see him. We're at Lee's Palace in Toronto.
Classic place.
So good. We're at Lee's Palace watching the band play.
What band was it?
I was trying to think of what their name is as I'm talking about it. They're really good. I will get to it before
the end of the
show.
This
closes out because
right.
they're very good.
Okay.
But anyway, so I'm interviewing him, then I see him back at Lee's Palace, and he's like kind of lingering around, and like we have a drink and just like kind of shooting the shit. I think this is great because this is Dave Foley.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, he's like, yeah, you know, we should exchange numbers and we should go grab a coffee or whatever. My naive, dumb 19-year-old mind is like, this is great. He must think I'm the next Gilda Radner. He must think that this... He sees this special spark in me, and we need to talk. So I go down and I meet him at the Starbucks, actually where the Score is now, front in King Street. And we're sitting there having a coffee and a tea, and he starts telling me about his divorce and like all these weird stories that like a kid doesn't need to know. And I'm like, oh, anyway, sir, so... tell me your theories on this.
Yeah. So how can I get into comedy?
Totally. Right. I was so stupid. Like so naive. That's like, there's no way this old man wants anything to do with young me. There's no way.
Yeah. Why would that?
Well, I don't get
right,
it.
Yeah.
He wanted me to go see when they were doing Day of the Dead, the live like comedy show that they were doing in Toronto. I was like, yeah, we should go down and I can get us tickets and we'll go do this thing. And then he gave me like this really awkward long hug goodbye. And that's when finally I'm like,
oh.
I'm like red alert. I need to send out like an Amber Alert at this point. Like this is not going well. He's like telling me how much money he owes his ex-wife. He's like hugging me long. And anyways, I get in my car to drive back to Ajax, Ontario. And I like
nice.
Sent him a text. I'm like, Mr. Foley, I think that you got the wrong message.
Mr. Foley. All you had to say was Mr. Foley, and he's going to go, it's
meow,
done.
Meow, meow, meow. Yeah. Party's yeah. over. Yeah, I was so dumb. I was like, this is great. Oh, my God. I can't wait till my dad. I hung out with Dave Foley. I was like, what?
Dave Foley hit on me, Dad. We did a web series a couple years ago called "But I'm Chris Jericho"
yeah,
in
some
Toronto.
Yeah, was a friend of mine.
Oh,
he wrote that for you.
Yeah, who's?
It was
Craig or Gary
yeah,
or
yeah, Craig.
Okay.
Craig Brown.
Yeah, Craig.
That. Yeah, and
so
Gary.
One of the Gary Rideout.
Yeah,
good guy.
Comedy
one,
bar in Toronto. You guys, check it out.
Comedy bar.
Great
go down
spot.
There. Funniest place in the world.
It is great.
But because Gary is so hooked up in Toronto in the comedy scene, we had like Colin Mochrie came in and Andy Kindler came in. But Scott Thompson played my acting teacher.
Oh, my God.
And he comes in and he's like typical comedian. Like, comedians are so funny, and sometimes they're like
so
troubled and weird and strange. And he was kind of wandering around the set, like, "Hi,
oh, how are
you? Yeah, nice to meet you." He had him put on this big, huge mustache because he felt the character mustache. It was the funniest mustache, but it was the unfunniest, like, guy.
He just became like a really sad,
super
mustache.
Sad. It was like the Paninini or whatever, the troubled clown, whatever it's called. So. And the script that they had for this was a really well-written script.
Super funny.
Super funny, really well done. But he pulled a Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now and showed up and didn't know any of it.
No.
But here's where the genius came in. Hit, action. He became the funniest man in the world.
That's great.
All ad-lib, all improv, super funny, butchering the lines they were giving him, but making it even better.
Yeah.
And just, like, he stole the show. He actually won an award, a couple awards, like the Canadian
Comedy
Comedy Awards for best web series performance.
No way.
Scott Thompson won for But I'm Chris Jericho.
That's crazy.
Yes.
But also amazing.
Amazing. Just see how he worked. You're watching. It's like, this guy's the shits. He doesn't even know the script.
Did he seem like happy doing it? Like, once he got into his little mojo mode?
Once he got going, he was amazing. And then afterwards, he was really cool too. But maybe it was early in the morning.
Canadians
maybe
that's are just, weird.
They're very strange, right?
Very, very
strange.
You know, I never really found like sketch comedy. I mean, I guess any comedian always like struggles in some regard with so many different things. But like, a sketch comedy phenomenon like him. I mean, you have friends. You're not fed to the wolves on your own. Like,
right, and he's working. You know, he was in that show Hannibal at the time, so he had just flown into Toronto for a day. Then he had a lot of stuff going on.
Most of those guys were like pretty successful. I mean, except for Dave Foley owing all of his money to his ex-wife,
which you know the whole story.
But when we were talking yesterday, and I found Bruce McCullough's CD.
That's right.
I forgot to bring it. I'll have to bring it to you later because it's you need to have it. It's fun. I found it in like a Deja Vu Discs a million years ago, and it's so funny.
It's so funny because I was like, "Oh, is the Daves I Know on it?" You're like, "Yep,
sure."
That
is.
Was the famous Kids in the Hall song.
There's like 30 songs on it. There's so many.
Are they all from the show?
No.
Okay.
No. There's one. One of them's my favorite. I think it might even be called like Fat Loser or something. But. Right. It's so dumb.
You mentioned a couple times Gilda Radner. Are you a big fan of hers and Saturday Night Live, or is it just?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of just a lot of women that were able to. I mean, like any girls, like you find like certain women.
Sure. Who's
that,
your inspirations or your heroes, so to speak?
Mine has always been Chelsea Handler, just
right,
in the sense that, like,
you kind of look like her a little bit. There's a similarity there.
It's because I drink as much as she does, probably. She's always been a big one for me in the sense that, like, sure, she is a stand-up comedian, but I liked doing comedy, but I was never a comedian. I never really did. Like, when I got out of high school, I went and did, like, the classes at Second City, and, like, I kind of just did that stuff, and then I got into acting right out of there. But that was, like, I wanted to be more of a comedic actress. But then once I saw Chelsea Handler, and that light bulb went off to be, like, that's what I want to do, is be a host where you can kind of free-for-all and still be a personality and be yourself. But her, Sarah Silverman was a huge one for me. Joan Rivers definitely was one that I tapped into a lot. Tina Fey, Amy Poehler. A lot. I mean, especially girls like that write stuff, and they are performers as well, but they're not necessarily stand-up. But I went through a phase where I thought that I had to do stand-up in order to be like one of them.
Oh, okay.
So
did you do stand-up?
I did.
Nice!
Yeah, I went to Yuck Yucks one night when they have the launching pad.
I love that name, Yuck
Isn't
Yucks.
Isn't it great? Yeah. I think their website's like hahaha.com, actually. Like,
Is it two ha's or three?
I think it's three. I think it's three, so you go in and you have to like sign up, and I was having like heart palpitations. I was so stressed out, but I was like, this is a thing that you have to do it if you want to be like one of these women, which clearly my career has deviated from that. But like, I, at that time, I thought that was essential that I did that. I mean, I went and I prepared my 5 minutes of stand-up material, which I think was like not very good.
Do you remember any of the jokes?
I really don't. I mean, I know there was one where I think I like pretended to fart or something. I don't know. Honestly, I never really. I don't know. I'm ridiculous.
I did stand-up. Back in about 1991, it was open mic. I was like you.
It's terrifying.
I want to go up and do stand-up. Now, I've since done comedy with the improv comedy with the Groundlings and performed.
Yeah.
So that, and that's pretty terrifying too, but you're with a team.
There's a safety net.
Yes. And those guys are so great. It's like playing hockey with Gretzky and Messier. Keep your stick on the ice, pay attention, and you'll score.
Yeah.
Going up on your own by yourself, especially at 20 years old with no experience. I remember the one routine I remember it was in Canada, they call it golden topping that they put on your popcorn at the movies. And I was making an analogy between golden topping and a golden shower.
Naturally.
And did not go over all that well.
But it's weird when you go to do something like that, because I feel like you walk into like what's called like the launching pad thing, and the people that are sitting there are basically daring you to make them laugh. Because you're not a comedian, and they know that you're just figuring it out and cutting your teeth.
Right.
You're just trying it. I mean, in my sense, I literally did it once, and I was horrified, but I didn't let anybody know I was going to do it. I went totally by myself, had like a shot before I went up and did it. And it wasn't terrible. It just wasn't, it certainly wasn't good.
What was your first time though? And now you have that experience.
I had never talked in, I still don't like public speaking.
Wow.
I hate public speaking.
So you're okay doing it in front of a camera, in front of millions, but
no problem.
If it's 20 people in an auditorium.
I hate it.
Really? That's interesting.
It really stresses me out.
Hmm.
I do, like, even when I go do like the, I do the Be a Star stuff for WWE, and like we do the Special Olympics unified sports stuff, and that stresses me out more than doing a live show for the millions of people that watch WWE.
I
don't know why. I think also, like, I get very uncomfortable putting on my professional hat of, like, with things like Be a Star in Special Olympics. It's like, there's, you have to be polite and proper, and you're talking to a certain demographic that isn't necessarily my real demographic. I like when I don't have to be nice or look nice or do any of that stuff, I'm far more comfortable. If I can just wear a t-shirt and some jeans and go out and shoot the shit, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I have to put on a pencil skirt and some high heels and like talk properly about things, I am sweating it.
Enunciate properly.
Oh my God,
from your
I
voice
hate
coach.
It. Especially when like Steph McMahon's there watching and you're like, we're all having such a good time.
So you talked about how, you know, your career has taken this different path. What did you, I mean, obviously WWE is so massive and so huge. Were there things that you noticed off the bat, like coming in here, about the, as far as how the company works, the enormity of it, like, was it bigger than you thought? Was it more pressure than you thought?
It wasn't more pressure than I thought, because I was used to doing a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, it's still, I mean, I'm used to it now, but it's like, before, I used to have to write and produce my own shows, essentially, or like at least work with a producer and know what we were talking about and have our talking points. And I was used to writing all of my own material. So now to walk in and someone's like, here's your script for, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my guest, Y2J Chris Jericho.
Right.
It's like, that's not that hard. It's not, there's not,
you're
a
more
lot
of just a talking
there.
Head.
Yeah,
here's your lines.
I mean, yeah, I mean, if I can't do that, I mean, shit, send me back to Canada, I guess. But I mean, between doing that, in the, definitely though, when I got into WWE though, and being in like the belly of the beast and seeing the way this company works, you have a whole new perspective for what you guys do and for the way that the company works. It's like, I think it's the same as you do with like any talk show, or not a talk show, with like a soap opera. That you can watch it, and I mean, I'm sure you know, it's like people can be very judgmental of what we do here, but they also don't understand that how big of an overtaking every single show is, how many people are involved, how much there's, you have to pay attention to how long segments run, you have to pay attention to what people are saying, if it's sending the right message. I mean, when it gets into wrestling, that is way over my head, and I have no idea what you guys are doing with that, but like, people I think don't fully understand or appreciate that. And I mean, even coming from what I did before, I had an appreciation for it, but coming in here and working for WWE, I like opened my eyes massively to what you guys do. I applaud you.
Yeah, it's
great.
Do you have a lot of interaction with, for example, with Stephanie?
Yeah, Steph's great. I love Steph. Stephanie's super, super cool. She's always been a big supporter.
Well, because she's also a woman in the man's world, quote unquote, right?
Yeah, and I think she gets that too. And but at the same time, I mean, I just think she's really cool. She's a super cool chick that like you can. I just passed her in the makeup chair, and we can shoot the shit about whatever, like something her kids have done or something going on in the show. Like it's always my conversations with her have always been very casual. But at the same time, she's definitely been like a big supporter and somebody that I know is good to go talk to, because it's like it's one thing for me to talk to like Michael Cole or talk to Jerry Lawler or even JBL, but being able to get like any bit of advice from Steph is like, those are the little nuggets of somebody. I mean, especially, I mean, even her as a performer, she's awesome.
Amazing. Yeah.
She's
absolutely
good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's great.
So how many hats do you wear in the company now?
Well, doing the backstage interviews, doing the panels. I'm doing a bunch of stuff for WrestleMania as well. There's a lot of stuff coming up for that. I'm going to be doing like the red carpet for Hall of Fame. I do a couple different studio shows. I do a show with Gene Okerlund that I'm doing.
Like a history show? Or?
Yeah, it's called WWE Vintage. Okay. So it's all old matches, all old
commentating
history.
Them or just introducing bumpers?
Yeah, we do like the bumpers for them, but we also like talk about the whole stories of them and stuff, especially Gene.
Gene's a great guy to talk to, because he's another guy that made a whole career in this business by, quote-unquote, never taking bumps.
Yeah.
And being so amazing. I learned how to do promos. He was one of the guys that helped teach me because – when I knew nothing about how to do a promo, you would go in there with Gene, and he would lead you through it.
Yeah,
even
he's great.
If you didn't know what to say or said something stupid, he would take it and make it good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it's kind of keeping that ball up. Is that...
Horatius.
You guys know what I mean. I didn't mean to keep the ball up. However that phrase goes, whatever.
Keeping it rolling.
Keep the ball rolling. But he... Yeah, I mean, even when I work with him, and obviously it's a little bit different now with what he's doing, but it's like he cracks me up. He is so funny. Mm-hmm. Like we'll be shooting stuff, and if he like messes up one of the lines or something, some of the stuff that flies out of his mouth is like you just can't script it. It is so funny. He just like he has it going on.
But and that's the great thing too. Like there is so much scripting in the WWE that it's great when you can go do a show or do something where the scripting is minimal.
Exactly.
You know, and that's where you can really shine for
I
what
love
you're
that.
Doing.
Exactly. It's nice to be able to have like those moments of discovery. Mm-hmm. You can figure something out, or you have a nice little moment that you're like, okay, I feel good about that. That was fun, or that was funny, or it was entertaining in any capacity. And one of the places I like to do that the most is actually on the JBL and Cole show.
Oh.
Because that show is so dumb. Every single week, we never know what's going on with it. Now that we've brought Summer Rae into it, she's a very good friend of mine. So, like, her and I, she's actually hysterical for people. I don't even know if she knows. I don't know if it's on purpose.
Well, that might be why she's funny.
Yeah, I think it's not on purpose. I don't know. I haven't figured it out. She's like Andy Kaufman to me a little bit sometimes. Where I'm like, what's going on? Are you for real right now? Y'all know that we got to do this, right? I don't know. Like,
wait till Summer Clifton is unveiled. Who's that?
But being able to go on and do that show, it's like we have very loose script, and that's like the fun, dumb crap of we don't know what's going to happen. We have a loose out of what we know it needs to be, but anything else that happens in between is like the meat of it that's fun.
Do you watch the matches when you're doing the pre-show and stuff? Yeah. Or are you still running around?
Yeah. Well, especially during pay- – so I just do the pre-shows for the pay-per-views. We sit there at the desk. It's actually a great setup because we have the desk and we have monitors right underneath the desk where we can just sit there and watch all the matches, which is great when you can't find talent viewing sometimes. And we've got a little ear set so we can just watch it. And
what last few questions. What's your favorite match that you've seen?
Ooh, my favorite match I've seen. I feel like the triple threat that Brock and Seth had.
And Cena, right?
And Cena.
Right.
That was awesome.
That was a great match.
That was really, really good.
That was a great match, yeah.
Obviously, Brock and Undertaker at WrestleMania blew my mind. being at the arena and witnessing that, I think.
Were you in the crowd or were you? Okay.
No. I was watching backstage at like Gorilla. Yeah. Like right outside, like the little talent viewing there. And everyone's just kind of like.
That's called a curtain sellout. Everybody's watching at the curtain.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, that was crazy. That one was really good.
How about NXT?
NXT, Cesaro and Sami Zayn. They're 2 out of 3 falls match. Absolutely.
Wow.
Those guys tore the house down. Those guys are great.
Cesaro a little underrated.
Oh
right?
My God. You know what? He's one of those people that I think he's fantastic. I think he has so many different things to offer, but I think that's got to be so frustrating for him. I mean, we've obviously heard about it in so many different capacities about for whatever reason people think that, you know, it's not working, it's not connecting, but I mean, he has absolutely every tool that anyone
he'll
could
tap
ever
into
want.
It.
He'll get
he'll
it.
He'll find
exactly,
it. They
so good.
They always find it, you know.
Exactly.
You're very music oriented. Who's your favorite band?
Oasis is always my favorite. Yeah, huge Oasis.
You think they'll ever reunite?
Well, I've heard that they might be doing a little something. I think that each of them are working on separate albums again, and then hopefully, I'm sure they will at some point. They'll come around.
It's amazing how many bands where brothers just hate each other.
Yeah, and I mean, those two are just like
Oasis, the Kinks, the Black Crows, just like they'll never play again, you know? Kinks, so we're never playing again. It's like, come on, yeah. You know?
That's funny. I was just listening to Kinks the other night. I was like cleaning up my apartment and going through albums that I don't normally listen to in the regular, which, so I have this best of Dolly Parton, and that has just taken over my last 24 hours.
Do you listen, are you talking albums, actual
albums?
Like
on a record player.
Vinyl.
Yeah.
Great.
That, and I have this other like Pat Benatar special.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I actually have a weird record that's actually Andy Kaufman, because we were talking about him. It's just Andy Kaufman interviewing his grandmother. It's so weird.
He was one of the weirdest
so
ever.
So nuts.
Ever.
Yeah.
Last question. Who's your favorite Canadian?
Ooh, my favorite Canadian.
I've never asked anybody that one before.
That is good. Ooh, God. John Candy.
Psh, oh, nice. I was thinking that.
Yeah, John Candy.
I was thinking Candy. I'm a big Michael J. Fox fan. I would throw him in there.
Mike Myers, but like... He's kind of lost a bit of his charm in the last.
Yeah. He's got a weird reputation too.
Totally. Yeah. He is weird. And I was gonna say Jim Carrey, but also like
same thing. Especially after the Dumb and Dumber 2 debacle.
They get all shiny and polished up, and they're just not that great anymore. You
got to go back to the roots and just be yourself.
Yeah.
That's why I love Michael J. Fox. Or, Candy obviously passed away so long ago, but they've never changed. You know, even Mike with Parkinson's and stuff, he still plays that role that we love, just different versions of it.
I was watching something the other day. I think I was actually watching Bridesmaids. And the person I was watching Bridesmaids with was like, said that, her name was just in my mouth.
Wig or Kristen Wig? Maya Rudolph?
Melissa McCarthy.
I was thinking that
Melissa McCarthy is like female John Candy, which I think is actually pretty good.
Good call. She's got a little Farley in her too. Did you see the SNL 40th anniversary?
Yes.
She did Matt Foley.
Yeah.
Down by the river. She kind of has that Chris Farley type thing going on too.
I adore her.
Yeah, super funny.
So super funny. She's
super
great.
Funny.
But yeah, John Candy, Uncle Buck is one of my favorite movies of all time.
And I'll give you an Uncle Buck and raise you Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Top three
for me ever.
Oh, that's great. I actually love in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles when he's reading the book, The Canadian Mounted. And I tried to buy that. I was watching that movie not long ago, and I was like, is that a real book? But it's not. It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
It's a prop.
It was a prop book.
Yeah.
We want to try and get the real. If someone's listening that owns the real Canadian Mounted,
send it to us.
We want it.
Please.
Give it to us.
At least photocopy it.
Thanks, Renee.
Thank you.
So I don't know a single person who doesn't have a mobile phone these days. I talked about it early on the show. We can't live without them. We're on water slides with them. We're taking them to rock and roll shows. You do everything on your phone, email, texting, pay bills, watch movies, listen to music. It's a one-stop rock and roll shop using your phone. I do everything on my phone except talk on it. I mean, how often do you actually talk on your mobile phone, right? I actually call people sometimes hoping that their message comes on because I don't really want to talk to them. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is I got something else you can do on your cell phone. You can shop for a new car, seriously. You really can take care of buying a new car right from your smartphone. TrueCar has created a mobile app that makes buying a new car simple and fun. Download the TrueCar app, and in 5 minutes, you create the car you want. Choose the make, model, special features, even the color. And once you have your specs filled out, you can see what others paid for the same car. And when I say others, I mean people who actually live in the same zip code as you. You lock in the guaranteed savings from TrueCar certified dealers in your area. And guess what? On the average, you save over $3,000 off of MSRP. Now, that's making smart use of your smartphone. They got an app for everything these days, but how many actually save you that much money? $3,000? Forget about it. Imagine what you can do with that cash. It's summertime. I can think of lots of things you do. You go to the Fozzy Show. You come to a WWE live event featuring Y2J. You go buy a Tremonti record. Whatever it is you want to do, do the smart thing and download the TrueCar app. Save time, save money, save us Y2J, and never overpay. You download the TrueCar app and you do it today. Thanks again to Renee Young. She's super funny. She's got a great vibe. I love her. I'm very excited to host Tough Enough with her together this summer. It's live, and it starts this Tuesday, June 23rd, on the USA Network. We've got 13 amazing contestants. We've got some pretty girls. We've got some good-looking guys. They are some strong, strong people. We're going to find out which one of them is tough enough, along with myself, Hulk Hogan, Daniel Bryan, Paige, and, of course, the amazing coaches Booker T, Billy Gunn, Amy Dumas, Lita. So many cool things happening. So many great surprises. We're keeping these people on their toes. This is like Tough Enough like you've never seen it before. It's my return to network TV. Check it out this Tuesday on USA Network at 8 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget also, my summer run with the WWE continues tomorrow night in Las Vegas. Sin City. Liars. Dun, dun, dun. And snakes. Dun, 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 dun. Liars give. Dun, dun. Ding, ding.
Dun, snakes take. Ding. That's right. I'm in Las Vegas in Sin City. The Y2J WWE Summer Tour continues. Come on out and hang out with me. I'm also going to be at Rehab at the Hard Rock in Las Vegas on Sunday afternoon. It's going to be a rock and roll party. Come rock with me. Also, June 27th, Boston. June 28th, Reading. The 2nd in Singapore, I will not be there. Don't forget, tough enough duties forced me to have to pull myself from that show. But I will be in Tokyo on the 3rd, Tokyo on the 4th, Philly on the 10th, Pittsburgh on the 11th, San Diego on the 31st. So many great shows coming up. I will be there. Hope to see you as well. Don't forget to come see Fozzy as well this summer. June 25th, Valor Ballroom in Des Moines, Iowa. I believe that's with We Are Harlot. Or it might be on June 26th at Sioux City, Iowa, at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. June 24th, The Square in Kitchener, Ontario. August 8th, Festival of Friends in Hamilton, Ontario. August 9th, Heavy Montreal, one of the biggest festivals in the world in Montreal, will be there. October 30th, The Kiss Cruise with Paul and Gene. Go to Fozzy Rock for all ticket info. And don't forget, the Cinderblock Party Tour resumes in the UK and in Europe starting November 14th all the way through December 6th. FozzyRock.com has all the information. VIP ticket. Come hang with me and come hang with my sponsors as well. Thank you for all of you that watch and listen to Talk is Jericho. And thanks to the sponsors. Hopefully, I want you to support them. Koios, Recovery Max, Arctic Ease Instant Cold Wraps, True Car, DDP Yoga, and of course, the Sponsero, who's been here from the start, Amazon. Do whatever you want to do. Buy whatever you want to buy. Use my links when you go shopping, whether you're picking up the new Black Veil Brides live DVD, Alive and Burning, or maybe the To the Extreme record by Vanilla Ice. It's a classic. So many great things you can buy. Go buy what you want. But first, go through my Amazon links. Go to podcastone.com. Click on the Support Our Show Sponsors banner at the top of the pagey wagey. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got Amazon links for the US, the UK, the Canada. Eh? Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show. So we keep doing this for you free for the next week. Go ahead and freeze extra challenges. Just getting shopping done. Help me out in the process. I really appreciate that. Please go to Amazon through my links. And please join me next week. Thank you to Renee Young this week. Thank you to Vanilla Ice this week, and thanks to all of you. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. And next week, we're kicking off Giant Week on Wednesday with the great Kali. That's right, great Kali. You think you don't speak English? He's going to prove you wrong. He's on Talk is Jericho for his first podcast ever, and it's going to blow your mind. So a big giant deep boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.